Welcome everybody to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am not joined by anybody. I had a guest all lined up, then I got sick, and actually, I don't know if you guys can hear it in my voice, I'm still not feeling all that great, so I had to cancel on the guest and reschedule that one, and I am going to record a really short show here, just because there, one, isn't too much going on, and two, I don't know how long I'll be able to stay vertical. I do have plenty to talk about, though. I want to get into this whole Lonzo Ball story and Big Baller Brand story. I want to get into some stuff here about Jason Kidd and the Lakers seemingly having a coaching search while they still have Luke Walton under contract and while he is still on the sidelines. I don't think the optics of that look all that great. And then Kuzma had an interesting quote today. Or the other day, talking about how this season has not been as much fun as last season. So I'm just going to, what I'm going to do is I'm going to start with Kuzma's comments first and just kind of talk really quickly about, you know, how expectations have really painted this season and continue to paint really everything about sports. And so when Kuzma says that, you know, last year they were able to focus on developing and growth and that process there, compared to this year where they can't focus on those things as much, right? They have to focus primarily on winning and making sure that they get the fullest return on the LeBron James era as they possibly can. And what that means for the everybody involved here is that, you know, for somebody like Kuzma, for guys like Lonzo and Ingram and Hart and throughout that young core, you go from, okay, I have to develop, I still have to make noticeable steps forward. And I can, you know, I can do that not really necessarily at my own pace. You still have to get as good as you possibly can, as quickly as you possibly can, without skipping steps. But, you know, it was everybody was kind of more on the same page, I felt like, last year, even between the front office and Luke Walton. Now, there was that weird whole thing with LeVar crapping on Luke, and we'll get to more LeVar here in a bit. And the lack of anybody really voicing support of Luke Walton throughout all of that. But, you know, it was still, you know, Luke was seen as a developing young coach. The Lakers had that young core, and it seemed like they were going in a more positive direction. And this year, obviously, you know, they're going to struggle to win as many games as they won last year, and that in and of itself isn't great. But this year, you could really get the sense of the steps that were skipped that should not have been skipped. I think everybody involved was too focused on, your focus just changes when you acquire a LeBron James in any given situation, let alone when he's 34 years old and is staring at mortality, NBA mortality, almost right as soon as he gets here, right? And that idea of him being surrounded by youth, it's kind of like that one guy who hangs out with college friends a little bit too long, right? And everybody's just kind of waiting for them to grow up. Like, if you're relying on everybody around you to keep you young, you're not necessarily going about things in the right way. And so for LeBron, you know, they tried to balance out the team's youth with, at, you know, counterparts, veteran counterparts up and down the roster. But what that led to was, well, as soon as injuries went to or occurred with key players, there wasn't the actual depth that we were told that the Lakers were going to have. They didn't have a creator, a primary creator, to carry the team when LeBron got hurt. They didn't have a defensive presence as a point guard to help the team stay afloat when Lonzo Ball got hurt. And all of these injuries were felt because the guys who were left behind had very similar skill sets to their veteran or youthful counterparts. And You know, one thing that I really think the Lakers need to address this upcoming year is, all right, who do we know the Lakers are going to have next year? Who do we know that the Lakers are going to enter next season with in terms of their young core? And then based on that, you then acquire people, you sign people or whatever, that feed or that supplement those skill sets. So if you have, so let's say the Lakers go in with all of their young core, right? You have Josh Hart, who's kind of your, you know, he's a slower prototypical two, but he's still in a prototypical two. So maybe you try to complement him with, you know, maybe a combo guard or something like that, right? Somebody who can split the gap between Lonzo and Josh Hart. And, you know, with Rondo, Rondo and Lonzo didn't make all that much sense together. And you know, while Rondo and Hart make a little bit more sense in the traditional, like speaking traditionally, it still wasn't a very natural fit. And KCP and Hart were almost never on the same page throughout this year. And so there were just too many pieces that were too similar to the other guys that played that position. And I think what the Lakers need to figure out a way to do next year is get guys who complement each other a little bit better than supplement, right? So this idea that the Lakers kind of approached their roster with, okay, if Josh Hart gets hurt, well then KCP will be right there to pick up that slack. And you know, that's fine. They're two role players there. But there was hardly anything done to be able to carry any kind of burden whatsoever. And it's hard to do this, right? It's hard to replace LeBron when he gets hurt. It's hard to replace a player as impactful as Lonzo is defensively. But the Lakers did a particularly bad job in that respect. So I think next year it's going to be interesting to see how people handle expectations. I think expectations of the season and the pressure that comes with expectations really had a major impact on the way that the season this roster operated. And so maybe they'll be a little bit better prepared for that next season. But, you know, one thing that the Lakers are really going to have to focus on, and I'm going to get to it here in a second, is building culture and understanding culture. And I think the way that they're going about, you know, kind of letting Luke wriggle on a hook to finish a year, and while a coaching candidate search isn't necessarily, you know, blatantly going on in everybody's faces, it is obvious, it's still painstakingly obvious that the vultures are circling above Luke while he's coaching on the sidelines. And again, it's just about, it just gets to culture and what the Lakers want to build with. So when we come back from paying a couple bills, I will talk about that. All right, we are back here on the Locked On Lakers podcast. I left off by talking about culture with the Lakers, and we've spent a lot of time throughout the season and over the entirety, really, of having this show is, it's not just enough to have good results, though. If we're being honest with ourselves, the results haven't been there since I started covering the team either. But it's not just enough to have results. It's also, it's the process that goes into those results matter, right? And for me, when I look at the Lakers right now, and you try to identify what matters to them, culturally speaking, I'm not talking about societally speaking, but like culturally, organizationally, what type of culture do they really want to exist, right? And, you know, Rob Pelinka talked a lot, and Magic Johnson talked a lot heading into this year of this culture of competition, that it was going to be a meritocracy, and if you earned your spot, you got your spot, right? And while that makes sense in a vacuum and in most situations, what that does sometimes lead to is animosity between the person who, quote-unquote, wins that role and the person they win that role from, right? And I don't know if the Lakers ever had a strong enough culture up and down the roster to where when the veterans started losing their spots to young guys, those veterans checked out. And that's what happens again when those veterans know that they aren't being invested in beyond the season that they're under contract for the Lakers. And I think right now you're also seeing it with Luke Walton, where the best thing for the Lakers right now isn't playing Rajon Rondo. It's not. It's they signed Machado, and they did not sign Manny Machado. I believe it was Scott Machado or something like that. I'm not feeling very good. I'm sorry. But they signed this Machado guy, and I believe he has played a total of like 5 minutes since he's been called up from the South Bay Lakers to the parent team. And that just tells me that, again, we knew this going in, that the front office and Luke Walton weren't on the same page. But when you look at the situation and Machado is not getting any playing time, when the sole purpose of him coming up to the Lakers is just to see what they might have in him moving forward into next season, and that isn't happening, that's an organization whose culture is just basically, nope, you know what, we're going to do what we're comfortable with while we're under contract, and then we'll go our separate ways at the end of the year. And, you know, I think that's what we're really seeing here with Luke Walton and the Lakers, is he's more comfortable playing Rajon Rondo. He is technically going to be under contract beyond this season, but we know that he's not going to be here beyond this season. He knows it. He's known it probably for quite a while, according to some of the people that have been privy to whatever's been going on there. Reporters and people I've spoken to alike have said that, like, this was never an all that comfortable fit with Luke Walton and the Lakers. And at this point, I think it's just outright toxic. And you know, Luke has still been professional. He hasn't said or done anything that would point to that. But, you know, playing Rajon Rondo when the Lakers are bringing up call-up guys to see what they might have moving forward beyond this season is not something that somebody who cares all that much about the Lakers' future would do. And I don't blame Luke for not caring about the Lakers' future. He's not going to be a part of it. And he was never, I mean, we talked to Bill Loram last week, and as he put it, the Lakers never really gave him a legitimate shot to be able to stick it out as Lakers head coach. So if they aren't going to invest in me, I'm not going to care about what they want me to invest in. I'm going to do what I have to do to get through the rest of this year, and then rethink some stuff as I head into, you know, my job search at year's end. And, you know, if for a Lakers organization that needs to build a foundation, they've done a pretty piss poor job of figuring that out. And, you know, the we saw it here with the Lakers after the trade deadline, where players were checked out, I thought, for good chunks of the rest of the season. They didn't seem all that interested in sacrificing for each other or for the betterment of the team. When the kids started playing better than the veterans just kind of checked out and said, all right, here, well, I guess we just got to get ready for whatever our next contract is going to look like. And you know, it sucks to see the Lakers in this type of a state when you know that these things are fixable, right? If you invest beyond a single season with somebody, they'll invest beyond a single season for you. And the Lakers, for some reason, even despite having gone through this now for half of a decade, if not more, haven't understood that. And they need to get to a point where they understand that. We are going to take another quick second here, and when we come back, I'm going to wrap by segueing awkwardly over to this Lonzo Ball and Big Baller Brand situation. It looks ugly. It sounds ugly, and it's really unfortunate. Not only the story itself is unfortunate, but with some of the reaction that I've seen to the story, I think it's really a bummer. So when we come back, I'll talk about that. So let's start here. I understand why LaVar Ball rubs people the wrong way, right? I get it. You know, he's loud, he's obnoxious. He has no problem telling you that he's going to get his and he's going to do whatever was best for Lonzo Ball and the rest of his kids, even despite what we think may not have always been what was best for Lonzo and the rest of the Ball family. I don't think that's mutually exclusive. Feeling as if LaVar Ball can rub me the wrong way is mutually exclusive from feeling empathy for somebody who gambled, pursued a dream, and came up empty, right? I'm fortunate enough to be able to hold this job where I gambled, sacrificed hugely, and was able to eventually find a niche and carve out a niche for myself to where my dream has come true. I would be devastated if I had to give this up. And there were times, trust me, I mean, before last season, Jen and I had to sit down on a couple occasions, and I had to convince her that no, actually, the show was having enough growth. My writing career was having enough growth to where it made sense to continue to pursue this job, this dream. But there were some tight months there where we weren't positive that this was always the best thing for me, the smarter path for me. And had I had to walk away from this dream, I don't know how I would have handled it, to be completely honest. And I think now for LaVar Ball, he gets taken advantage of, it sounds like, by this Allen Foster guy who took advantage of other people from his church, right? Like, he targeted people that he met in a church before all of this big baller brand stuff, took those people for upwards of $4 million, had to pay back $3.75, I believe, million as a result of a suit taken up against him, served some jail time and got out and apparently met up with LaVar Ball, convinced LaVar and the entire Ball family to welcome him into their lives, and now took advantage of that relationship to the tune of, it sounds like, at least right now, $1.5 million. And you know, what sucks here to me here is that we're already seeing Lonzo kind of cut. He's definitely cut this Foster guy out of his life. And it was somebody that he considered a mentor, like a second father figure. Those types of, like, having your trust taken advantage of by somebody who you consider a mentor is devastating. And that's something that a lot of people never really recover from. They have trust issues from that point forward. And then you combine that now with him. Apparently he talked to his dad and other people who were close to Lonzo tried to talk to LaVar and ask, you know, what's going on here with this Allen Foster guy. And LaVar apparently told, now I don't think it was malicious. I don't think LaVar, you know, told Lonzo, don't worry about it, because he was in on the take or anything like that. But it's still a major F up, right? And it's the type of thing, again, where Lonzo is now looking at his dad. He'll never look at him the same way. And now, look, I have a complicated relationship with my dad. It's in a great spot now. But I remember when my dad and I couldn't see eye to eye on just about anything. It was tough to that's a huge part of your identity that you are just now living without. And I think for Lonzo, he's being forced right now to grow up a lot faster than he's had to grow up previously as a result of all of this. And you know what? I find it sad. And I find it even more sad that, you know, a lot of people were kind of tap dancing on Big Baller Brand's grave, which I get it. You know, it sounds like a stupid company. They charged way too much for all of their merch. They failed with the Better Business Bureau. I understand, again, why some of those habits would rub people the wrong way, especially people who bought stuff and then never got it, right? Like, I can understand why somebody would be pretty pissed at that situation, but I still come back to, I don't think it's all that difficult to feel empathy for somebody. And in this case here, the Ball family is facing some huge questions across the entire household. And, you know, these things, as they turn out, sometimes they never fully heal. And I feel really badly for everybody who tried to chase that dream and came up empty. Now, we'll see if they actually do shutter the entire business. We'll see what else, you know, comes out and is made public over the next, I would imagine, week or so, and weeks to come as they try to figure these things out. But man, it sucks. It really does. It really does. These guys, you know, I think while it was misguided and obviously poorly executed, they made some decent points about the way that shoe companies operate and colleges operate with kids. Like there were decent points made along the way. Now were they made in the best possible way every single time? No, of course not. But were there decent points if you actually dug through and tried to get at what they meant in trying to make some of these points? Yes, absolutely. And in a lot of these cases, I was kind of sort of rooting for the Ball family, not just because, you know, it just doesn't serve. It's not really in my nature to actively root against anybody to succeed, unless it's like the Celtics, or the San Francisco Giants. but I was hoping that they would be able to pull this off, because if they did, then you're looking at a completely different approach to the way some of these kids get treated before they are the millionaires that play in the NBA. And, you know, it's a bummer the way this is all turning out. It's a bummer on a human level. It's a bummer on an intellectual level. It's a bummer in just about every way, shape, or form. And seeing anybody out there who is kind of taking a victory lap over the way that this all played out, that was really unfortunate. I hope those of you who did that, you know, I hope you rethink some stuff. And then the last thing about Lonzo, which I find interesting here, was LeBron's comments on the whole thing and him saying that, you know, he's really proud of Lonzo for taking up for his own and accepting the responsibility of his own agency. And, you know, I think for one thing that LeBron does now, he doesn't always go about it in the best ways. And a lot of times his grabs at his own agency affect others around him, as we saw back during the trade deadline. But, you know, I do think he legitimately cares and genuinely cares that Lonzo figure this out. And I think if there's a person that you would want to have on the roster and looking over you as you try to kind of grab back some of this power for yourself and take agency over your career, it's LeBron who I would want to learn from. And so, you know, hopefully Lonzo grows from all of this. Hopefully LeVar grows from all of this and recognizes that, you know, if this was always a fool's errand, then I hope they recognize it as such. If there were things execution-wise that they could have done differently and done better, I hope they recognize that as well. But I more than anything, I really do hope that on a human level, everybody is, you know, minus this Foster guy who seems like a real piece of crap. I hope that everybody involved in this, you know, the Ball family, is able to, you know, move forward and not lose track of what else is important here. It's not to say that the money aspect isn't important. Money makes the world go round. But I hope that they realize that other things here are important as well. And while Lonzo might feel let down by LeVar, I hope that he's able to at some point, you know, if not forgive completely, but come to understand what LeVar was trying to do. And if it wasn't out of malicious intent, and I really don't think it was, but if it was, if it wasn't out of malicious intent and it was just a mistake in trusting the wrong person, I hope everybody involved is able to learn from that mistake and move forward. That to me seems like the most important thing here. That'll do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. Thank you guys very much for tuning in. As usual, I am going to try to rest up and be better for tomorrow's show. But I guess there are tougher things to try there are things that I would imagine a lot of people don't want to hear me complain about having to host a 20-minute show. So I'll buck up, and I'll talk to you guys tomorrow.